Okay, let's start from the beginning of the Sedra. It says, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim. The Medrash finds fault with Yaakov Avinu for starting up with Esav. And it refers the Pasuk in Mishle, Ma'achez Bo'ozne Kelev, Mecharcher Ariv Lo Lo. That's not exactly the Pasuk, but it's close enough. Pasuk says, somebody who gets involved in an argument that's not his, sticks his head where it doesn't belong, is like a person who pulls a dog's ears. Right? Leave the dog alone, he won't bother you, don't bother him. If you're looking for trouble, you'll pull the dog's ears. If you're looking for trouble, you'll get involved in other people's arguments. So too, Yaakov Avinu could have very quietly come back to Eretz Yisrael, not sent any messengers to Esav, tiptoed back, and avoided confronting him. The fact that he confronted him, he's looking for trouble. Don't look for trouble. Avoid problems. That seems to be the message. Now let me tell you a Rashbam that seems to be diametrically opposed to that. And we could just simply say, well, they have two different divergent views on life. And we have a lot of machlokas in Torah. This is one of them. But it's always better to make peace and to minimize machlokas so we can qualify when one applies and when the other doesn't, when it doesn't apply. I'll tell you the Rashbam. The Rashbam is very different than what you are used to thinking about the following parsha. It says that Yaakov Avinu put his family safely on the other side of Mavre Yabok, and all of a sudden we find Vayivoser Yaakov Levado. Yaakov's alone by himself. Somehow he separated himself from his family. He left them. So you're familiar with the Chazal that says that Yaakov went back for some pachim ketanim that he forgot, right? He forgot, Rashi brings down there, he forgot some earthenware jars, and he went back to get them. When we learn from that tzadikim, chavivim, aleihem amonam, yoser migufan, which we will get to later. But the Rashbam says something different. The Rashbam says that Yaakov Avinu realized that Esav had no bone of contention with his family. They were basically safe. His only bone of contention was with him. So Yaakov tried to run away and not confront Esav. And that's when the Rabban Shem sent not Esav's malach, but Yaakov's malach, Michoel, to stop him from running away. You can't run away. You got to face him. That's the Rashbam. Now, on the surface, these two things don't seem to be compatible. Chazal find fault with Yaakov that he didn't avoid Esav, and the Rashbam says that when he tried to avoid Esav, he was forced to confront him. So which is it? Anybody want to venture an explanation that will bring peace between these two mafoshim, between the Medrash and the Rashbam? Yeah. Okay. I'd say it a little bit different, but that's what I want to say. You have to try to avoid problems in this world. Person should not look for trouble. God will give you as much trouble as you need. You don't have to look for it. That's what this world is all about. Facing problems. But you don't have to look for them. The Rabban Shalom will definitely give you as much as you can handle. But once you have a problem, you can't run away from it. You have to face it. And you have to solve it. Solving a problem does not always mean that you don't run away. But sometimes the solution is to run away. Give an example. Okay. Maybe it's not a happy example, but it's the only way I can think of right now. A person is in a very bad marriage. Okay, and they're suffering. So there are different possible solutions to that problem. One is they can change the circumstances. They can change their husband, make him a nice person, right? Make him the kind of person that will make it a happy marriage. It's one possible solution. Send him to some marriage counselor and change him. One possibility. That's a nice solution. Second solution, I can change myself. Maybe the reason that I'm miserable is my fault. And if I would just change my expectations and my conduct, then I wouldn't be miserable. It's another possible solution. There's a third solution. Get divorced. Get out of that marriage. You're not going to change him. You're not going to change. You're just going to be miserable. Then there is a solution. The Torah speaks about getting. We are not Catholics. Torah does speak about get. It's one of the Tariq mitzvahs. It's not a mitzvah to get divorced. Stop. But if that's what the solution is, it's a mitzvah. So you're not running away from the problem. You're facing it, and you're realizing that this is the solution. Running away from the problem and solving the problem sometimes look the same thing, but they're not. Another example. Person gets up in the morning, and he says, I'm so depressed, I just can't face the world, and he goes back to sleep. That's running away from your problems. Person gets up in the morning and says, I have so many problems, I think I need a good day's rest to be able to face them, and he goes back to sleep. That's not running away from the problems. That's utilizing some kind of method to be able to deal with the problem. I'm not running away from it. I'm using a day of rest as a tool to help me to go against those problems the next day. It's a conscious decision. It's not running away. So sometimes the solution and the running away may appear to be the same thing, but they're not the same. It depends what their motivation is. Okay, so that's the lesson, I think, from these two Mefarshim. The Medrash tells me, avoid problems. Don't look for problems in this world. The Rav Avinashim will provide you with them. But once you have them, you can't run away from them. Then you have to find a solution. Sometimes the solution is to run away. But that's a solution. It's not to avoid the problem. Okay. Any questions on that? Okay. Next. So Yaakov sends Esav, and he says, Im lovan garti, v'tarig mitzvah shamarti, v'lo lamadati mimaisav haroim. I kept tarig mitzvahs, and I didn't learn from Lovan's evil ways. Anything bother you about that, Rashi? Garti is Taryag, and Yaakov is boasting to Esav that he kept tarig mitzvahs, and he didn't keep his evil ways. So, first of all, Yaakov is boasting, I kept tarig mitzvahs. But he's telling Esav two things. He's telling him that he didn't really benefit from these brachas yet. And Esav could say, well, because you didn't keep tarig mitzvahs. And they were conditional. But he said, I did keep tarig mitzvahs, and I still didn't get the brachas. So what are you jealous of? Secondly, because I did keep tarig mitzvahs, you were only given power over me when I didn't keep tarig mitzvahs. But I'm telling you I did, so you don't have power over me. In addition, that which he said, v'lo lamadati mimaisav haroyim, I didn't learn from Lovin's evil ways, some say, was a confession, not boasting. He said, although I kept all tariq mitzvahs, I didn't learn from Lovin how to keep them the way that he kept his rishas. Lovin used to get up at 5 o'clock to cheat people. I only got up at 5:30 to do mitzvahs. I didn't learn from Lovin's evil ways how to do my mitzvahs properly. He was a bigger zoriz in his rishus than I was in my mitzvahs. So he's confessing that although I kept tarig mitzvahs, it wasn't with the same fervor that yet Lovin kept his averus. Okay, with all of that, there's still a problem here. Yeah? Right. It's impossible. That statement is impossible for a few reasons. First of all, you can only keep Tariq mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael when there's a Beis HaMikdash. Then it's possible to keep Tariq mitzvahs because some of the mitzvahs apply to the Beis HaMikdash. Some of the mitzvahs are only in Eretz Yisrael. So it's impossible to keep Tariq mitzvahs outside of Eretz Yisrael without a Beis HaMikdash. Thirdly, there's another problem here. Yaakov Avinu married two sisters in Haran. That's one of Tariq mitzvahs. Whatever what you're going to say, why he was allowed to do that, Lamaisa, he didn't keep one of Tariq mitzvahs. Whatever you'll do to explain why it was okay, but he didn't keep that mitzvah. He was allowed to transgress it, but he didn't keep it. He married two sisters. So 612 was the most he could have kept, not 613. So what's Tariq mitzvah, Shomarti? In order to understand that, I'll tell you another machlokas, which you also will make peace between them. Instead of saying that they have two divergent opinions on life. First, I'll tell you the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon explains a pasuk in Rus. The pasuk says the following. Batere ki misametzes hi voleches ita batechda ledaber eleho. When Naomi saw that Rus was making an effort to keep up with her, she stopped talking to her. She stopped trying to discourage her. What was going on? Rus wanted to accompany Naomi back to Eretz Yisrael, convert, and become a Jew. The Naomi, as the halacha says, had to discourage her. You have to discourage a non-Jew just to make sure that they really mean it. And you have to tell them that three times. Discourage them three times. By the way, that doesn't mean you just say, well, maybe you shouldn't be a Jew. Maybe you shouldn't be a Jew. Maybe you shouldn't be a Jew. Okay, now we're finished with that. Let's go on. And some geirim come like that. They've already read up on geiris. They know everything there is to know, even before the internet. Right? There's books about they can read about geiris. They said, I know you have to discourage me three times, so let's get on with it. Discourage me three times, and then let's get on. That's not what it means. It means you have to really give this person a lot to think about to see if they really want to convert. And therefore, you have to give them three different reasons to discourage them. What I understand it to mean is the following. Whenever a Gioris comes to me, or Ger or Gioris, and they want to convert, a non-Jew, first thing you have to do is ask them why they want to convert. Because maybe the reasons they want to convert are not good reasons at all. For instance, they want to convert because they want to get married to somebody Jewish. Had nothing to do with being Jewish. They just want to marry somebody Jewish, which we don't convert people for marrying people who are Jewish under most circumstances, unless we know that they really are sincere otherwise. And then sometimes we do marry them, even though they're interested in marrying somebody. It's a possibility. But I had once somebody call me on the phone that she wants to know how much it costs to convert. So I told her it doesn't cost anything, but it's a process, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. She said, no, I got to get married tonight. I got to be converted by then. This was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I said, well, I'm sorry, but we don't convert people for marriage. She said, I don't know, Rabbi so-and-so, who was a infamous Reform rabbi in Miami, who would marry anything to anything, literally. Right? He would marry men to men, women to women, Jews to Goyim, together with priests, without priests. He advertised like that. He once made fame in Miami. He married two circus performers from Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey Circus. I'm not sure if they were Jewish or not, but he married them together, and he used as witnesses two elephants. He said that elephants never forget, so they're probably the best witnesses. In any case, this guy, she said, this rabbi told her that he'll convert her for $500 within an hour. So I said, I'll tell you, that rabbi's conversion will be worthless. If you go to Israel, they won't accept it. No legitimate person will accept his conversion. So what is he giving you? A mask to masquerade as a Jew. I'll sell you a mask with a long nose. You can masquerade as a Jew for $250. You'll save $250 and you'll be just as Jewish as him, except you look Jewish. She said, no, I got to convert by tonight. That was the last I heard of her. So sometimes people want to convert for the wrong reasons. So first you have to ask them and then tell them that maybe this is not a good reason to convert. Or I once had somebody tell me they want to convert. So I asked them, what religion are you? She said, Catholic. I said, well, why are you not satisfied with being a Catholic? Why not remain Catholic? She said, because the Catholic religion forces us to believe in things that I just can't swallow. So I thought she's talking about a man being God or Immaculate Conception or one of the other fantastic things that Christianity teaches. So I said, can you give me an example of one of the things that Catholicism forces you to believe in that you can't accept? She said, yes, the splitting of the Red Sea. I said, I hate to tell you this, but we're the ones who went through the Red Sea, not the Catholics. She said, you guys believe in that too? I said, yeah, and besides that, the Muslims also believe in it, so forget about being a Muslim. So she left my office very, very disillusioned. In any case, so the first thing is to find out why they want to convert. I want to convert because I like lox and bagels, and I heard you're not allowed to eat it unless you're Jewish. No, you could eat lox and bagels if you're not Jewish. That one kind of discouraging. Find out why they want to convert. Secondly, even if you really want to convert for good reasons, but you have family, are you going to be able to deal with your family? Are they going to disown you? Are you going to be able to deal with that? That's a second kind of way of discouraging. And thirdly, socially. Are you going to be able to exist socially and financially? But let's say you're Parnassa, right? You're a woman, and you're a Broadway singer. You're not going to be able to keep that that profession being Jewish and being from. So are you willing to give up your profession? Or you're a man and you're a butcher and you work with treif of meat. You can't keep that profession up. Are you willing to become a kosher butcher? You live in a beautiful place outside of a Jewish neighborhood. Are you willing to move into a Jewish neighborhood? You can't be Jewish and live out in somewhere in the middle of nowhere, middle of a Goyish neighborhood. So all of these things are things legitimately the person has to think about. So Naomi, I don't know where we got off the tangent, but in any case, you learned something new. So in any case, so Naomi was discouraging Ruth with all these ploys to see if she really wanted to convert. You know when she stopped discouraging her, says the Pasuk, when she saw that Ruth was making an effort to keep up with her. Says the Vilna Gaon. Why did that convince her? Because Ruth was a young woman compared to Naomi, who was an old lady. And if Ruth was having a hard time keeping up with Naomi's pace, that means that the Satan was making it difficult for her. And that showed Naomi that this is a quality mitzvah. Because if it wasn't a quality mitzvah, if she didn't really want to convert, l'shem shamayim, the Satan would leave her alone. What does he care? Let her convert. Who cares? She doesn't really mean it, l'shem shamayim. But the Satan is willing to put his energies into discouraging people from doing things that are really good. He's not interested in that happening. So he was making it difficult for Ruth to accompany Naomi. Then Naomi realized that Ruth really meant it, l'shem shamayim. Bottom line, says the Vilna Gaon, if a mitzvah comes too easily, it's a siman that it's not really a quality mitzvah. Mitzvahs are difficult if they're quality mitzvahs. That is the Vilna Gaon. Now let me tell you what the Dubna Magid says, which seems to be just the opposite. The Dubna Magid, as usual, says a mashal to explain a pasuk. The pasuk is, Lo osi karosa Yaakov, ki yagata bi Yisrael. You haven't called on me, Yaakov, because you put too much effort, Yisrael. Says the Dubna Magid. Mashal. Person came to this train station. He was too tired to take his baggage home. So he went home without the baggage, and he told his son to go back to the train station and bring him his baggage. The man hears the son huffing and puffing, schlepping the baggage up the stairs, and from behind the closed door, he says, turn around, go back to the train station and get my baggage. He said, I brought your baggage. He says, no, you didn't. You've got somebody else's. He said, how do you know? You didn't even look behind a closed door. He says, because all I had was a little attaché case. And if you're huffing and puffing up the stairs, you must have somebody else's baggage. So too, the Rabban Shalom says, you haven't called on me, Israel, because you put too much effort into the mitzvahs. My mitzvahs are easy to do. If they're too difficult for you, it must be that you got somebody else's mitzvah. You're not doing them properly. Because if you do them properly, they're easy to do. Now, on the surface, that seems to be totally the opposite of what the Vilna Gaon says. The Vilna Gaon says that if mitzvahs are easy, it's a siman they're not quality mitzvahs. And the Dubna Magid says if the mitzvahs are hard, it's a siman you're not doing them properly. So which is it? Are they supposed to be hard? Are they supposed to be easy? In order to make shalom, because the Dubin Magid was a Talmud chaver of the Vilna Gaon, they were very, very close. Hard to say they had such divergent opinions. Therefore, I want to say the following. They're talking about two different things. In order to keep the Torah properly, in order to keep mitzvahs, you have to have the right values, standards, lifestyle. I'll give you an example. Just give you an example that applies to men or to women. I guess women. You're all aware that there are women who feel cheated by God, that the Rabbanu Shalom didn't offer them the opportunity to really get close to him by putting on tzitzis and tefillin and davening for the Amid and laning, and that deprives them of their ability to connect to God. And they feel cheated. Now, it's hard for me to accept that the reason that those women feel like that is because they are so spiritually inclined, because that would imply that women of previous generations, like the Chazon Ish's mother, who never really bothered her that she couldn't lane, couldn't daven for the Amid, couldn't put on tefillin or tzitzis, were not spiritually inclined. Like, they were happy to be in the kitchen and make their chocolate cakes, but these women are so spiritually inclined that these things bother them. But the Chazon Ish's mother, Rebbetzin Kanievsky, Aleha Shalom, didn't bother her. She didn't sit all day and decide that she's coming to the Kosel HaMaravi on Rosh Chodesh and shriek her kishkes out, you know, singing there. It didn't bother her. Okay, why? Because she didn't care about Ruchnias. She cared more about, I don't know what she cared about, but surely not Ruchnias. But these women are really so spiritually connected that it really bothers them. I can't really accept that. Okay. So then why? So let me tell you why. If you grew up in a society, which we all grew up in, where fame is a value to itself, okay? I'll give you an example. In the society we live in, all of us, if somebody would come with a magic wand and offer you two possible occupations. One, you will be a famous movie star. Everybody will know your face. You'll be on the screen, and you'll be famous. And you'll make a certain amount of money, have a certain amount of talent. That's one. They'll just wave a magic wand, and there you are. Or you will have a lot more talent, make the same amount of money, but you will be the person who is behind the scenes directing, producing, making the scenery for the movies. But you won't be on the screen. Your name will appear at the end in those little print that nobody ever reads. Nobody will know who you are, but you'll make the same money and you'll have a lot more talent. Which of the two do you think most people in this world would choose? First or the second? Why? Because it's a value in this secular society to be famous. To the point where years ago, I saw in the Cleveland Plain Dealer that a person murdered his neighbor, and they couldn't find a motive. He admitted to the murder, but they couldn't find out why. He didn't have anything to do with this guy. He just walked into his apartment one day and murdered him. Finally, he admitted the reason. He wanted to be famous. And he knew that murderers get their picture on the front page of the paper. He did it for fame. Okay, that's a little absurd and extreme, but it shows that being famous is a value in a secular society. That doesn't mean that being famous is something wrong, but it's definitely not a value in a Torah society. Okay, it could be a means to an end, but it's not an end in itself. I'll prove it to you. What was the holiest place in the world? No, Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? Did they ever do a spread on the Kodesh HaKadoshim in Better Homes and Gardens of how what the decor was? No. Nobody ever saw it except once a year the Kohen Gadol, And first he had to make a smoke green, so even he didn't see it. Nobody ever saw it. It was hidden away. And that was the holiest place. What do you see from that? That fame is not necessarily a value to itself. Just the opposite. In a Torah society, that which is more hidden is holier and better than that which is in the forefront. Therefore, somebody who grew up in a society of the kind that we're familiar with, where fame, where being in the forefront is a value, I can't imagine why they shouldn't feel cheated if they can't lane, and they can't be a balkore, and they can't be a bal tefila, and they can't put on tefillin and tzitzis and be out there in the forefront. But if you were brought up with the Torah values and not affected by society, which is impossible almost, but you were brought up in a sheltered Torah society where from the time you were born, you were taught that that which is more tzanua, more in the background, is better, then I could see in that society men feeling cheated. Hey, how come God pushes us out in the front and we can't be behind the scenes? But surely a woman couldn't feel cheated. This is the ideal. What do you see from that? That if you have the right outlook, if you have the right perspective, the right values, standards, then the mitzvahs are easy to keep because the mitzvah fits the base. But if your base is not Torah standards, not Torah values, but you want to keep mitzvahs, then it's like putting a round thing on a square base. It doesn't fit. And then the mitzvahs are difficult. And as a rabbi I once saw wrote, trying to remember his name, Rabbi Hollander, Zichrono Livracha. He was an old-time young Israel rabbi. I remember seeing in his name, he said that somebody who basically lives according to Torah values has tarig mitzvahs. Somebody who wants to live a secular lifestyle, but he wants to be frum, he doesn't have tarig mitzvahs. He has 613 problems, because every mitzvah is a problem according to his lifestyle. So he may be able to be frum, but every mitzvah is a problem. It goes against his values and standards and lifestyle. That's what Yaakov Avinu said. He didn't say, tarig mitzvahs kiyamti. I fulfilled 613 mitzvahs. Tarig mitzvahs shamarti. I protected, guarded them. That when the time would come that I could do any mitzvah, it would apply. I'd be able to do it because I didn't learn from Lavan's evil ways. I didn't gain his lifestyle, his values, his standards. I guarded my ability to keep tarig mitzvahs when they would apply because I kept my standards and values and lifestyle a Torah lifestyle and not a Lavan lifestyle. Because if I had learned from Lavan his values and his standards, then even if the mitzvahs would apply, I wouldn't keep them because they'd be problematic to me. Therefore, the Vilna Gaon is talking about getting those values. That's what Rus was doing. She wasn't doing a mitzvah per se. She was adopting a Torah lifestyle following Naomi. That's difficult. If that comes too easy, something's wrong. But once you have that Torah foundation, that Torah values, standards, lifestyle, then the mitzvahs are a cinch. Then the mitzvahs fit perfectly. If your outlooks on life and your perspectives and your values and your standards are right, then the mitzvahs are a cinch. They're meant for that base, that framework. Yes.
Okay,
it's a good question. That doesn't mean, I really don't want to go into detail because I want to save it for a different time when I know we're going to speak about it. You're right. It doesn't mean that the Torah is going to be easy insofar that you don't have to put effort into it. It's not going to be difficult, though, where it's going to contradict your lifestyle and be a problem for you. It's just going to mean you have to put effort. Torah, just the bottom line of what I'm going to tell you at a different time, is Torah is not easy. It's an opportunity. It's worth it. That's the idea. And that way, it's easy to put in the effort. It's worth all the effort you have to put in. But if you don't have the right lifestyle and values, not only is it difficult to do, but it's not worth it. Then it becomes very, very difficult to push yourself to do something that you don't think is worth the effort. That's the difference. Okay, I don't expect you to understand that 100%, but as we get closer, perhaps, to Shavuos, or maybe Parshas Bechukosai, which is, I plan to speak about this at length. Okay, but you're right. But that's the difference. Yeah. True, same idea. It's not that Torah doesn't demand effort. There's a difference between effort and being hard because it contradicts your lifestyle. When you want to do it and you recognize how important it is and you're willing to put the effort, then adarabah, the more effort, the better it is. But where you don't appreciate it and therefore you don't want to put in the effort, it's not worth it. That's what we're talking about, where it's difficult because I don't want to put in the effort. And that makes it difficult. I have to force myself to do something that I don't really feel is worth it. That's difficult. Yes. If you think it's worth it, you're willing to put in effort for anything. But if you don't think it's worth it, why should I bother? And if you feel forced to do it because, well, that's the way I was brought up and whatever, right? And I know that it's right, but I really don't feel it, then that's very difficult. Even a little bit of effort. Okay. But we'll go, again, it's a whole class to itself almost. At least a good portion of one. So, yes. And it's a pet peeve of mine, so I'm going to for sure tell you about it. Yeah?
The first thing that is the difference between working on a project that you want to work on for whatever reason and like working on a project that you have to work on for school, say?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Or being forced to do something that you don't think there's any purpose to it, and then even a little bit of difficulty makes it, why in the world do I want to do this? And you feel that it's impossible. Okay, I don't have any desire to do it. That's exactly the difference. Okay, next. Yaakov Avinu, it says, Vayira Yaakov Ma'od Vayetzer Lo. Yaakov was afraid, and it bothered him. So some say he was bothered by the fact that he was afraid. He shouldn't have been afraid. He should have bitachon. And the fact that he was afraid bothered him. Okay. But Rashi brings down a different pshat. Vayira Yaakov Mo'od. Yaakov had a right to be afraid. Shema Yigro Machet. If you're not perfect, then there's what to be afraid of in this world. And therefore, the guarantee that he would survive Esav maybe didn't apply. It was conditional. So he was afraid that maybe he would be killed. Vayetzer lo, it bothered him, maybe you'd have to kill other people. It bothered Yaakov, maybe you would have to kill Esav or some of his 400 men. So on that, the obvious question is, it's a mitzvah to kill Rishoyim. Ba'avod Rishoyim Rina. It's a positive thing to get rid of evil in the world. Why would it bother Yaakov that he maybe have to kill Esav or his 400 men? He should have been looking forward to the opportunity. The answer is that if good things can happen in a nice way, or they can happen in a not nice way, then something's wrong if it doesn't happen in the nice way. In other words, similar to Reb Meir and his wife, Bruria. Reb Meir had some thugs, people who made his life miserable in his neighborhood. And he used to daven they should die. His wife heard him, and she said, instead of davening they should die, why don't you daven they should do tshuva? And he listened to her, and he davened they should do tshuva, and they did tshuva. And she said, I have a proof that that's the better way. Because it says, Yitamu chatoyim min ha'aretz, chatoyim v'lo chotim. Let the sins go away, not the sinners. If you can get rid of the sinners by killing them, or by taking away their sins. Better do it in a nice way than a not nice way. That's what bothered Yaakov. Maybe if I was on the right madrega, I would be able to influence these people and make them not reshoyim. If the only way to rid the world of them is by killing them, then something's wrong with me. Then I'm not on the right madrega. That's what bothered him. Yeah.
Why in the Lamar Sinem do we ask them to destroy enemies?
Excellent question.
To turn them into
a... Excellent question. The some say, I think the Vilna Gaon, that that's the intent. We're not looking for them to be killed. Just shover oidim umachnia zedim. If, right, they'll be destroyed, how can you be machnia them after they're no longer here? The idea is humble them. Break their rishus. So really the bracha is to turn them into tzaddikim. But that's not the pashup shot in the bracha. Pashup shot in the bracha is get rid of them. So they say that this halacha only applies to people that are, what's it called, rehabilitated. You can rehabilitate them. But there are certain people that are beyond that. They're incorrigible. They're really wicked people that you're not going to change. You're not going to take Ahaminajad and make him a Baal Tshuva. The man is evil through and through vis-a-vis Klal Yisrael. Those kind of people, it's a good thing to get rid of them. In other words, L'chatchila, you have to try every nice way. But when there's no other nice way, and the question is leaving them or destroying them, destroy them. So in Shemoneh Esrei, we're talking about people that we've tried everything else. And it won't work with those kind of people. You have to destroy them.
Esav
isn't
one of those people?
What? Yaakov felt that he's his brother, you know, and maybe he could have Hashpoah. He's Yitzchak's son. I mean, Maisa Esav had a lot going for him. So he gave him at least the feeling that maybe it's possible. And if it's impossible, then I feel that I'm missing something. Okay, hold on 1 second. We may get to that. Maybe. If not, we'll save it for another time. The question is a good question. If Yaakov was supposed to try to be Mashpian Esav, why did he hide Dino away? He could have tried to be Mashpian. The simplest answer, okay, just to give you an answer, but it's not really what I... is that you can try to Mashpian somebody where you're the one that's doing it. You can't put your daughter into danger for that. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll tell you, since in the Sedra anyway, the Alter from Slabotka says, what was Yaakov supposed to do? Try to marry his daughter off to Esav? Because maybe she'll be mashpi on him, and maybe he'll be mashpi on her? That's how you look for a shidduch? Go to the Tel Aviv bus station, find some druggie, right, who's in a drunken stupor, pat him on the shoulder and say, oh, I'm a girl from Michlala, would you like to marry me? Maybe I'll be mashpi on you. That's how you look for shidduchim? No, obviously that is not the way to do it. So how come? That's what Yaakov was supposed to do. Marry his daughter off to Uncle Esav in the hope that maybe little Dina will be mashpia on Uncle Esav. Says the, and it fits what I'm going to tell you now too, says the Alter from Slabotka, Yaakov Avinu did 100% what he had to do. He had to hide away Dina for fear that, who knows, maybe Esav would mashpia on her. The problem with Yaakov was that when he knocked the nails into the box, he did it with a little bit too much fervor. He should have been crying. I wish I could be mashpia on my brother, but I can't take a chance with my daughter, so I have to hide her away. But really, he felt terrible about it, that he couldn't be mashpia on Esav. But he didn't. That means he was not so much concerned about his daughter, there was a lack of concern about Esav. That's what the Rebbe Mishum saw. Sometimes you can't be mashpia on people, but you feel bad about it. That's what Yaakov. I may not be able to mashpi on Esav. I have to kill him. But it should bother me that I can't be mashpi on him. That's the idea. Because then when you'll be able to do it, you'll do it. But if it doesn't bother you, then even when you can do it, you won't do it. Which brings me to what I wanted to say anyway. The Reb Chaim Brisker says there's two kinds of kanoim. You know, people can go out and protest for Shabbos or whatever. One is like a housewife, and one is like a cat. They both are kanoim. There's a mouse loose in the house. The housewife wants to kill that mouse, and the cat wants to kill the mouse. There's a very big difference between them. The housewife is hoping there will be no more mice in her house, and she would be much rather that the mouse just left and didn't necessitate killing it. But if it's there, she's not going to leave a mouse in her house. The cat is hoping there'll be plenty more mice that he can go and catch, because he likes eating mice. There's kanoim who say, I hope that everybody becomes Shomer Shabbos by Shabbos, that I could sit at my meal in peace and not go out to the streets to protest. But if there's going to be Chilul Shabbos, I'm going to have to protest it. And there's some people who say, ooh, I hope there's plenty of Mechalel Shabbos, because otherwise my Shabbos is going to be pretty boring. So I'm looking for the action, right? I hope there's people more that are going to be Mechalel Shabbos, so I can have more action. So it depends how you feel about it. Not so much what you do. Sometimes you have to do something. But if you understand that it could be done in a better way, or you're forced to do this, but you could have done something else, and you feel bad that you couldn't have that opportunity of influencing Esav, or the circumstances are, you're going to have to kill it, but it bothers you, then that's okay. But if you do it without being bothered at all, it's to you the same thing if it's done the nice way or the not nice way, something wrong.